On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we have a pinch hitter. Bailey Freeman, a.k.a. Foolish Baseball, joins me to talk about some upcoming free agents, open up a mailbag, some really goofy questions in there, including one about jury duty, and then we guess the 2025 nominees for the Heart and Hustle Award. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with more heart and more hustle than David Eckstein. I'm Jake Mintz. That is not Jordan Schusterman. I am joined today by special guest Bailey Freeman, a.k.a. Foolish Baseball. Good morning, my dear friend.
Good morning. I like how below me it says personality behind Foolish Baseball. That really adds a lot of mystique to what I'm doing.
You used to be more anonymous than you are, correct?
This is true. People, I think I did the first year or so without people knowing my appearance, and then I did another year without people knowing my actual name. Give it a few more years, I'm going to just throw out all my social security numbers, credit card numbers, all that. But right now, we're kind of in that nice middle portion.
So, a quick story about social security numbers before we hop into the meat of this episode. I was talking to a baseball front office employee who's giving me some fun dope from the trade deadline. And was like, you can't tell anybody about this. Like, I trust you. And I, in return, just sent him my social security number as collateral. How do you feel about that decision?
You know, I've actually heard that you can't do that much with a social security number on its own. I heard that you can't do as much identity theft as you may think. So I don't know. Pretty good trade on your part. Savvy move.
And I ended up getting the dope that I don't use because we don't break news. All right. On this episode, I am going to fly through my midseason free agent ranking update. Bailey is going to tell me why and how I'm incorrect. We're going to giggle at the New York Yankees, who lost yet again last night to the Texas Rangers. We're going to pop open the mailbag, tons of fun emails for me and for Bailey. And then at the end of the show, as I teased in the open, our annual Heart and Hustle Award guessing game. For those who have been listening for a while, MLB, I believe actually the MLBPA, does an award card called Heart and Hustle, which is the most vaguely defined award in baseball. There are 30 nominees, one from each team, and Bailey is going to guess the nominees. And then on Friday, Jordan is going to do his best to beat Bailey at that game. But we will begin with our opener. Which is my 2025 free agent rankings. Now, Mr. Bailey, you have this in front of you. I am not going to go through the entire thing. Number one is Kyle Tucker, because duh. Number two is Alex Bregman, because duh. I want to start with three versus four on this list, which is Pete Alonso versus Kyle Schwarber. I think this is a super interesting discussion. If you were doing a free agent ranking, who would you have ahead of the other?
I think I'd probably go Schwarber. It's interesting. We'll talk about them, you know, I think maybe later on via the mailbag as well. But Schwarber, it just to me, is a better complete hitter. Like the way he's hitting, you know, even with for some average now at like 250, 260-ish, like gets on base more than Pete generally, you know, walks more than Pete. It just feels like he has a profile that is just a little bit more replicable in terms of like, you know, doing it over and over again in the long term. So I would lean a little bit towards Schwarber, who's been really consistently getting better and better every year over the last, you know, 3 years or so.
So I went back and forth on this like 100 times because I think there's legit arguments for both, right? Schwarber is 2 years older and does not play a defensive position. However, he's left-handed and I think the clubhouse element in general is overstated. I think he's one of the few players of baseball where it does have some sort of value. But I think that he has risen above Pete, like you said, in terms of offensive production this year. He's going to hit like 60, might hit 60 home runs. Certainly going to hit 50 home runs. I believe he's currently at 40. Here's a separate question. Do you think he has a chance to win the MVP?
I kind of don't. We saw like the glass ceiling be broken in terms of Shohei, but that was with a base stealing element as
Trailblazer.
Well.
Trailblazer.
Right, exactly. But yeah, I mean, Shohei won it with a stolen base element in the 50-50. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, PCA season is maybe more impressive than Lindor's last year. We'll see how it finishes out. He's still got 2 months to go. But yeah, no, I think we're in a situation right now where if it's, you know, him versus the field, I'm definitely taking the field. I this gives me MVP 4, MVP 3 vibes.
MVP 3. They should make trophies. They should do bronze medals.
They do get, like, a bronze medal. They get to get on a Zoom with Greg Amsinger at the end of the year.
Oh, congrats.
Nothing
you win.
Better than that. And you that win, smooth, Charlie velvety Bucket. Voice.
So, quick Greg Amsinger aside. I once took, when I was working at MLB Network, I took my grandmother to visit the studio. And we got out of an elevator and Greg Amsinger was waiting on the other side of the elevator. And my grandma just goes, "My God, you're a handsome fellow."
He is a handsome fellow. Your grandma wasn't wrong.
She wasn't wrong. That situation has never happened to me. I'm not sure how I would have responded. Let's hop back to the free agent rankings here. So I have Tucker, Bregman, Schwarber, Alonso. Where on this list, this is a very vague question, where on this list am I the most incorrect?
Here's what I think you're wrong about, Jake. I take some issues with the ranking of JT Realmuto at 15. This is an interesting element here because there's a lot of scarcity in terms of catcher free agency over the last few years. And you can work under the assumption that that drives up the price of catching on the free agent market. But I mean, Realmuto, who is, you know, 34, like, he's really been kind of in a decline phase of his career for the last, you know, 3 or so years. And he's in a position where I wonder if clubs, you know, would weigh signing him versus, you know, taking a shot at, you know, someone in their minor league system or already on their 40-man roster. Like, I'm not sure if there's that much value above that replacement player. And I look at, you know, Michael King right behind him, and I know it's kind of apples and oranges with, you know, starting pitchers and catchers, but, you know, Michael King had an amazing year last year, should be able to return and pitch soon this year. Like, I would think that kind of that tier of pitchers you've got below Realmuto, you know, including guys like maybe even Woodruff, Giolito, Bieber, would do better on the upcoming free agent market than Realmuto. They're younger than him, for example, and the pitching is probably going to age better than his catching.
I think it takes a big man to admit when they're wrong. And I am a little man, but yet I'm still going to admit that I'm wrong here. I think you're right. I think my thinking with Realmuto was the scarcity of free agent catching. He's the only catcher I have on my top 50. Teams always need catching. I also think that over the last month, he has proven that he's not washed. I don't think he is a top 5 catcher in the world anymore, certainly, maybe not even top 10. And I think that the age does bring concern with it, but you're right. He should be, he's currently at 15 on my list. And I do think he should be behind this group of pitchers that I have right below him, which is Michael King, Ranger Suarez, Brandon Woodruff, Lucas Giolito, and Shane Bieber. I'm curious, Bailey, of that group, King, Suarez, Woodruff, Giolito, Bieber, are there, like, how would you parse that group of what I basically thought of as, like, second tier arms?
Yeah, definitely King would be tops on that list. In fact, I would maybe argue that he's in a separate tier from the rest of these four. Woodruff is a really curious one to me because, you know, he's had shoulder stuff, which is scarier than elbow stuff in a lot of situations when you're talking about the long term. But he's been really good since coming back. I also see he has that option as well on his deal, and I don't know what the chances are of that getting picked up. They might be decent, you know? Well, it's mutual, though, so I guess that doesn't really exist. That's not going
to
happen.
What is the point of a mutual option? I need someone in baseball to explain this to me.
I mutual option, that's just free agency, baby. You and your club agree on a price that makes you happy. That's what free agency is, you know?
It's like, I want to go and see how many mutual options have ever gotten picked up. Because
but it looks so good when you tweet it out.
Oh, it's like, that's love, you know?
Yeah.
Mutual option, that's love. Okay, flying through the rest of these. So you said Realmuto too high at 15.
Yeah.
What other free agents you have thoughts about?
Can I hit on this tier of hitters you actually have in front of Real Muto? Gleyber Torres, yeah. Luis Arraez, Josh Naylor, all infielders, all, you know, various forms of hitterish. I feel like all maybe 29. I like Naylor. All 29 years old, that's also good too. I feel like maybe I like Naylor more than Arraez at this point. I think okay. If you look at what Naylor's done in recent years, if you just want to, you know, take like a simple park adjusted stat, like, you know, OPS plus or WRC plus or things like that, that can kind of take into account the full slash line, you know, that includes Arraez's average, for example. Yeah. Naylor's slightly outperforming him. I think he is, neither of them great defensively at first base, but I think maybe Naylor's better. And, you know, it's a profile that I think GMs are more comfortable with at first base than Arraez. You know, he has appeal to some, but not to everyone. Some people want pop at that position. They need it. They need, you know, runs driven in. And then you've got Gleyber as well, who, you know, honestly, I would consider putting Gleyber ahead of, you know, some of the guys you have, like some of the other Yankee guys like Bellinger, Grisham, and then even, you know, Murakami's kind of a wild card here coming out of NPB. But yeah. I mean, Gleyber's had a really, really good year this year. Like, he's been very, very impressive. Really, I understand you're probably basing this somewhat on his free agency results from last year, which is that, you know, he had to take that deal with Detroit. Kind of surprising he got a 1-year deal to some extent. So, you know, the market has kind of already spoken on him once in a way that hasn't quite been able to speak on Arraez or Naylor. But I mean, he's had a very impressive year, and I would have to think that he does better than both those first basemen. And I would have to think, honestly, that Naylor does better than Arraez.
I have Arraez above Naylor because of two reasons. I think that Naylor, like, he's been able to be a well above average big leaguer with the body, looking what it looks like. But I think that as he gets older, has to be a concern, or at least on the pro-con list, fair or not. And then I think that some GM out there is just going to fall for Arraez's shtick. Definitely. In a way that they're not going to fall for Naylor's. Like, dude, Buster Posey, thinking about Luis Arraez collecting knocks. You kidding me? Like, I just think that there's someone who's going to look at their lineup and be like, we have too much swing and miss, and they're going to overpay for Luis Arraez. As far as Gleyber goes, the reason I have him behind the other Yankees for Bellinger and Grisham is just that he does not play, one, good defense, or two, defense at a relatively important position. And I think that Grisham, he's a weird one because, like, he's a good defender despite not being fast. And in a way, I like that more, projecting forward. He's not dependent on what's going to get worse over time.
No, absolutely. I think that's fair to say. And there are defenders who are able, you know, to do that. I just recently did my project on Corey Seager, who's actually graded out well at shortstop over the last few years. He is not fleet of foot, you know, he's not have the greatest, you know, arm strength if you go on the old Baseball Savant, but he makes the plays, right? And that's, I guess that sort of means he has great fundamentals to overcome athletic shortcomings at that position at his age. So yeah, no, I totally get that. I was looking at Arraez versus Naylor. I was a little surprised that the splits are similar. I kind of thought of, you know, Naylor is just a platoon bat, a righty masher, not so good against the lefties. But Arraez splits for his career are very similar. So that's not really as much a factor as I thought maybe it would be.
They're more similar than you'd think. Like, if you looked at each of them, you'd be like, that guy hits for power and that guy doesn't. But at least this year, Naylor seems to have traded a little bit of juice for more contact. The last one I want to touch on at the top here, and then I'll kick it back to you, is Munetaka Murakami, who we've talked about a bunch on this pod, kind of the next big guy to come over from Japan. He missed the first 4 months of the season with an oblique injury. So he didn't play at all. And when evaluating a player like that, who's trying to come over, he and the team, I believe is on the Swallows, essentially signed a 3-year deal 3 years ago with the understanding that he was going to come over at the end of the deal. And this is the last year of that deal. So he's coming over basically no matter what. But after he missed 4 months, it was like, what the heck is this player? Like, it's, what are we evaluating? He's been back for a week and he already has 3 home runs in that time. And so if he's creating the same amount of power that makes him a special, like, Max Muncy type corner masher, he does not have that level of batting eyes. Let me be clear. But like physically, it's kind of Muncie-ish. If he can get back to that, I think just because he's 26 and offers top of the scale raw power, he could get a bigger number than Alonso just because of the time that a team would be willing to give him.
No, I agree with that. And we've seen, I think, some of the players coming over from NPB and KBO overperform expectations in terms of the contracts they get. I think Yoshida's contract is like a pretty good example of that. Yoshida got a lot from the Red Sox, you know, and it's like if Yoshida can get that, then Murakami can get, you know, more than that. I think it's interesting to note, too, you know, if people want to go look at Murakami's numbers over the years and particularly going into this year, in NPB, they're having just a crazy dead ball era right now. I mean, teams are scoring like 3 runs a game there. So if you have like 850, 900 OPS, like you are like elite of the elite over there. So that's another thing that I would point out as we're sort of assess Murakami's chances going forward.
I want to see what like the average like OP, like the league OPS over there is right now. Because you're right. It is 1905. The league OPS right now, this is in the Japanese Central League. So there's like the Pacific and the Central. The Central as a league is OPSing 629.
Right. Yeah. and the league runs per game is 2.96. So, I mean, you're looking at just an amount of offense that is kind of, it's unfathomable unless you saw like maybe 1968 in Major League Baseball.
So we have dead ball, juiced ball are like our ends of the spectrum, right?
Right.
What's the middle?
Is it just middle-aged ball?
Middle-aged ball.
Yeah, just bought like a sports car ball.
Midlife crisis ball.
Yeah, just for men ball.
Just whoa, easy, Bailey. Some of us go pro in something other than sports. All right, rest of this list. Anything stand out? Anything you're angry about? Anything you're steamed about? Anything you want to throw tomatoes at me virtually about?
I don't know. Like Helsley's freaks me out a little bit. Still, Helsley's has
interesting.
There's been. I feel like there's been so many like warning signs over like the last couple of years for him. Even though he continues to perform statistically, like, and so I know we look at like the next tier of relievers below him is, you know, Devin Williams, Luke Weaver. You know, obviously we'll get to Williams last night, but I'm sort of freaked out by Helsley a little bit. Going into this free agency period, it'd be kind of apples and oranges comparing him to the starting pitchers above him and then, you know, the outfielders and starting pitchers below him. But I don't know. He's like a guy that like continues to give me pause. There've been like runs where he loses fastball velo. And I'm just not so sure about him.
I totally get that. And my retort is the following. He is kind of the only reliever that's going to hit free agency that has gotten better over the course of this season. So his fastball velocity has ticked up gradually over the course of the year. His walk rate has ticked down. The quality of the contact he's given up has ticked down. And I just think he's the most sure bet. Now, again, if I was a GM, I would be the anti-Alex Anthopoulos and like never really pay for a reliever just
right.
because
Me
they're
either.
Impossible to predict. So maybe that should be reflected on here, and I should move Ryan Helsley down even further from where he is at number 21. Let's wrap this up. Anything else before we live at the Yankees?
Ryan O'Hearn's really good, and I can see kind of in your past rankings, he has moved up. But, I mean, he's just so darn hitterish, and, you know, you look at, you know, kind of the tier of guys like that were way ahead of those first basemen we hit on earlier, like Arise and Naylor. I don't know if he's that much worse than them. He's 3 years older, so that's obviously going to have like market implications. But like, here's another guy who just like mashes righties and has proven to be able to do it over the last, you know, 2-3 seasons. So, I'm curious to see if he could. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but I'm curious if he would maybe overperform your ranking and surprise people.
Yeah. The thing with O'Hearn that scares me is the platoon splits are pretty scary. Like, he has a 667 OPS against lefties and an 855 against righties. Now, to be fair, part of that is because he wasn't getting playing time against lefties in Baltimore because they were mixing and matching. I'm curious if with the Padres stars and scrubs all-star lineup, he'll see more southpaws. And if he, you know, like he falls to me in like the Jonathan Aranda, Kerry Carpenter group of, or Jesus Sanchez is like this too. It's like, I do not trust you against a lefty and you're a top 30 hitter in the world against a righty. I don't know how you evaluate those types of players.
I don't know either. It's tough. I think there's some front offices that really value platoon splits and others not as much. But I will say even O'Hearn's platoon splits aren't that different from the platoon splits of Arias or Naylor, you know?
Yeah. So for you, like you do the Foolish 50 every year where you rank top 50 guys. Have you ever ranked a player like that? Like, did you have Kerry Carpenter on the 50 this past year?
I did not. I think I've sort of intentionally gone out of my way to not rank platoon bats like that. And that's just, you know, I want a guy who can compete for 600, 650 plate appearances a year, you know, and not have to take days off if there's a lefty starter on the mound.
But the thing about it, right, is the teams obviously really value it because come postseason time, you know, rolling Kerry Carpenter out there against Emmanuel Clase, for instance, there's a ton of value in that. Let's move on from the free agent rankings. You can go and read that at yahoo.com. It'll be up today on Wednesday. And let's apologize to the New York Yankees, whose mentions right now must be horrendous. The Yankees losing their fifth in a row last night to the Texas Rangers, 2-0. Nate Eovaldi was sensational. Will Warren was fine. The bullpen for New York held it down until the eighth inning when Devin Williams coughed up the lead again on a Rowdy Tellez little duck fart over the second baseman's head and in the center. Two runs score, and the Yankees drop another ball game. And I have pulled up, but before we apologize for their mentions, any like big picture thoughts on the Yankees, Mr. Foolish? Now, you know, as an East Coast biased, Northeast biased person myself, the Yankees are a main character in my life. I like to think about them. Many people, not me, like to laugh at them when they do poorly. Do you, as a Southern raised gent, like what are your childhood interactions with the Yankees?
Oh, from my childhood, I mean, absolutely loathing them. You know, I think loathing them the way that many baseball fans do. You know, the Yankees won, and granted, I was a baby, but they, you know, they won in 96 against the Braves, you know, when the Braves were up 2-0. So, you know, I grew up in a Braves fan household. And so I was kind of taught to hate the Yankees. You know what it is, Jake? We don't learn to hate naturally. We're taught that. That's what it is. You know, no one hates anybody naturally. This tribalism, that's something that's taught. And I was taught that. But I guess as I've gotten, you know, older and I've, you know, sort of like made a career in baseball in my own little way, I find sort of just that I don't care about Yankees discourse the way I used to. I don't think they're any more special than the other 29 teams. I don't really root for them to lose any more than the other 29 teams or win more than the other 29 teams, because what I hate actually now is more this idea of like Yankee exceptionalism. That they always have to be the villain, that we always have to care about what the Yankees are doing. And so that's kind of where I'm at it right now. But I'm also like completely willing to laugh at them when they do poorly.
So I think your point about Yankee exceptionalism is really interesting. And I we've said on the show, like when the Yankees are at their best, they have the superiority complex just cooking, right?
Yeah.
In a good way. And when they're at their worst, it comes back and it bites them. I do disagree that I think they are different than the 29 other teams because they think they're different. Like, and that is true in both the players and the fan base. Like the fan base sees itself as exceptional. Would you agree with that?
Completely. I think most fan bases see themselves as exceptional though, and they're wrong, you know, but yes, do Yankees fans see themselves as exceptional? Yes, they do.
Yes. And I think that just creates a fascinating dynamic. And I have Aaron Boone going on Talking Yanks for me is must-see TV. And I think one of my favorite moments from those interactions over recent weeks is when Boone, I think he just told John Boy, like, I don't care what you think. Like, right. he was like, I don't care your opinion on how I answer questions or how my players answer questions. And I think that that is such a fascinating, it's a truth, right? The managers and the players should, to a point, not care what the fan base thinks. But then it's like, you have to pretend. You have to pretend to a point that you care what the fan base thinks because they are paying your bills.
I mean, I think are we not in that same situation in our own little way, right? Like
absolutely.
I get YouTube comments, and you know, I have to appease my fan base as well. Even though I think I have great ideas, even though I really like to come up with the content ideas myself, you know, I have to appease the fan base and make them feel like they are valued because they pay my bills.
Yeah. I like the idea of you responding to Patreon subscribers being like, I don't care what you think.
Yeah, I don't care. I'll take your money, but I don't care.
The Yankees lose 2-0, and I am now cracking open the Twitter mentions. We have four delightful ones here that I'm going to read out. Rosie says, when was the last time that you guys won a match? Well, the answer to that would be, I believe, Thursday. But fascinating way to describe this. When was the last time you won a match, Bailey?
Well, first of all, I will say last night's match, you know, which we saw the Rangers, they won that one 2-0.
2-0.
That was a 2-0. It was a 2-0 drubbing, even.
This person who said the last time you won a match, maybe they're just like a diehard NYCFC fan and they just are flipping over to the Yanks. And maybe this is a legitimate question. Like, hey, my search engine of choice is not working. When's the last time you guys won a match? Our next one is from Rinko. And this one is outstanding. Another waster season. No ring in 16 years. It's always the same old story. Lots of aged, fading has-beens. Lots of overhyped future superstars. Lots of strikeouts, errors, and boneheaded base running. Zero heart, zero fire, zero leadership, and zero fundamentals. I mean, this looks like a poem.
Is there more that continues after the at the very bottom, or did he just run out of characters?
He said the Steinbrenner has petered out. Just sell the team already, Hank. Now, I'm impressed that this dude knows petered out. And also, yeah. Just sell the team already, Hank, is kind of a, like, he means Hal. Hal's right. Older brother who died a couple years ago, who was, I think, never in charge, was Hank.
Uh-huh.
And so this person knows enough to critique Hal, but mistakes him with Hank. I just love it's always the same old story. Lots of aged, fading has-beens. Lots of overhyped future superstars. Lots of strikeouts, errors, and boneheaded base running. It's like, yeah.
I know this is an audio platform, but there are very interesting things happening with capitalization in this. That's what makes it really feel like poetic, because when the author writes lots, the L is lowercase. However, author. There's a lot of uppercase as well occurring here. Zero heart, zero fire, zero leadership, all capitalized first letters.
Thank you, Rinko. Our next tweet is from Yanks Weekly podcast. Finally, a Yankees podcast.
Finally, a podcast by Yankees fans for Yankees fans.
Oh, finally. I think we had a bit, Jordan and I, recently that was like, there should be a Yankees podcast for non-Yankees fans by non-Yankees fans, you know?
Oh,
I guess maybe that's what good. This is.
For I think the there should be a podcast. Sorry to interrupt you. I think there should be a podcast that just tells it like it is.
Oh, I totally agree.
Isn't that a good idea?
Doesn't hold back?
Just cuts through all the crap and tells it like it is. Oh, that's my idea.
That's a great point. Maybe that's what this podcast, Yanks Weekly, is. Yanks Weekly says, investigate Williams and Boone for gambling. I'm dead serious. probably making hundreds of millions betting on other teams to beat us. Give me another explanation. You guys are a joke. Cashman, grow a pair of balls and step up. Boone needs to be gone.
Man, I hear. So first of all, I would be very impressed if Boone was in on a gambling operation and the only player he had involved was Williams, right? Like, he would somehow have to have communicated that the team has to get shut out. The offense can't score any runs, you know, like he had to build a lineup that was plausible, that included Aaron Judge and yet was capable of scoring no runs. Like, I mean, honestly, I would say that's pretty impressive if he's pulling it off.
I would be most impressed by making hundreds of millions.
Right.
Betting on another team. Hundreds of millions.
That means he's going to buy the Yankees.
Yeah, if maybe that's the ploy. Maybe Aaron Boone is gambling on the other team to make enough money to buy the Yankees from the incorrect Steinbrenner. Our last tweet is from El Magnifico. Blame Devin Williams, sure. But Rums would have helped.
I mean, that's just true. Yeah. That's just the truth.
Yeah. Great. And this is my favorite type of response to a team losing, is the person being like, you know, great start for me, Eovaldi, last night. That's just baseball.
Yeah, you know, I do like those. It's tough to talk about, you know, when your team gets shut down like that. Like, where does good pitching begin and bad hitting end? I feel like still in the discourse, we don't quite know how to talk about it, even though it is a zero-sum game.
Like, if Garrett Crochet shuts you out, you're not like, you guys stink, you know?
Yeah, right.
But if you get shut up by Austin Gomber, you know, it's a whole different bag of worms. All right, let's take a break.
But what if Austin Gomber was just on one?
Oh, you never know. On that Austin Gomber slander, we'll be right back. And when we get back, we're going to crack open the mailbag and read some of your questions. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's open the mailbag. Usually these emails are for me and Jordan, but because Jordan abandoned me to go on vacation, which is his right as a podcaster, these emails are instead for me and my dear friend Bailey Freeman, aka Foolish Baseball. And we will begin with an email from McKenna. McKenna says, hi, Jake and Jordan. Suck it, Bailey. First time, long time. Ooh. Have you ever heard of a baseball player getting jury duty mid-season? Just wondering what happens. Is I have a game at 7 a good enough excuse for a hardship? Do they even have to go in for the initial summons? Anxious for your inside scoop. Cheers, McKenna. Bailey, what is your jury duty experience?
I had one. I did not serve on the jury, but I was summoned for jury duty once and got out of it because I no longer lived in the city that I was summoned to. So that's been my only interaction with jury duty up until this point. As far as players go, I've never encountered this or heard of it, but I would have to imagine that they're able to get out of it to some degree. But I mean, it's kind of shocking. You know, my dad is a physician. You know, that seems like a fairly important job. He's had to go in for jury duty a couple of times still.
I was on a jury a couple of years ago in New York, which was a fascinating experience. As far as I can tell with players, the reason that most of the time they don't have to do jury duty is because most players have residency in an area in which they do not live. For instance,
right.
Aaron Judge, I believe, is registered in California, is like his license says California and not New York. And because he's spending most of the season in New York, he is not available to serve in California. In the offseason, it's probably a different story, and we probably just don't hear about it. And there's certainly a level of notoriety that would cause a player to not be on a jury, right? Like Aaron Judge, hilariously, appropriately, could never be on a jury because he's too famous, right? Like he would skew the whatever the juriness of it all. However, I did find two instances of players having to go to jury duty, usually during spring training, because the odds of a player having residency in Arizona or Florida are significantly higher. And so Trey Turner in 2017. In 2017, he is from Lake Worth, Florida, which is very close to where the Nats have spring training. And because he was there during spring training, he missed a day of spring training to go for summons. Amazing. And then last year, Josh Winkowski, a pitcher for the Red Sox, was in the mix for like a rotation spot out of camp. And because he is from the Fort Myers area, he was called on by Lee County for jury duty during spring training. Incredible.
This is beautiful stuff. I had no idea about this. Thank you, McKenna, for the question. Good to learn all about jury duty and its relationship with Major League Baseball players. And yeah, that does make sense that in spring training, they might get you.
Yeah, you're there. You're there. This is an article from MLB.com from Joe Trezza. This is great. Winkowski says, one of the questions they asked was occupation and would this trial be a hardship? I said, I'm actually in the middle of spring training. So yes, I really don't like using the I'm an MLB player card, but I really can't miss too many days of camp.
I mean, fair, right? But you know, here's the thing. Everyone's kind of got a thing when they get called into jury duty. You know, yeah, everyone's got, they'd rather be at work or rather be doing anything other than being at jury duty. You know, what if you're a student and you've got a big test coming up? There's all kinds of reasons why not. And I guess that's why they're maybe strict about who gets out and who doesn't.
Our next question is from Lucas. Sup, guys. My name is Lucas. I'm from Brazil.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Love that. I have a question mostly for Bailey, but I guess Jay can answer it as well. This year, I did my own selection of pitchers and hitters I liked and disliked for the season. For those of you who do not know,
the editor's note.
For those of you who do not know, this is one of the Foolish Baseball staples. Bailey does it every year. Usually, I do my selections based on StatCast or Fangraph's advanced stats that draw my attention during my investigations, relying a lot on expected stats. Oftentimes, I select players that might have a little narrative behind them. Though I did quite well last year, this season, I am sucking big time. Do you guys have any tips for guys like me navigating through a storm of different stats and numbers online so I won't get fooled again next year? Or is it, at the end of the day, baseball being baseball? Thanks.
I think baseball being baseball is fair. And as someone who goes through this exercise every year, as you just said, every year I pick five pitchers I like, five hitters I like, and then five players I dislike, actually ones that I think will perform lower than expectations. I'm a big spreadsheet guy. You know, I'll fill out a spreadsheet with like maybe four or five relevant stats that I just kind of do in-house. You know, for me, like when I look at hitters, for example, the three most important things I think a hitter can do are barrel up the ball. So that's going to be, you know, your barrel percentage, you know, swing and not miss, make contact, so your contact rate, and then, you know, not chase out of the zone. And if you can be above average at all three of those things, chances are you're going to be an above average hitter. So that's kind of something that I look at for in terms of hitters. With pitchers, I think you start to look into some of the pitch grading stuff, you know, your Enoceris stuff plus, start to understand, you know, how their pitches work. Those are sort of the tools that I look at when trying to determine how a player will do in the future rather than just looking at their past, you know, ERA or their past OPS.
Something I like is, I think injuries are important. I think that a lot of time when a player has a down year out of nowhere, they're usually playing through something. And even though they're not missing time, it is affecting their performance in a meaningful way. I like, for instance, Bo Bichette last year, right? It's like Bo Bichette, right? Huge dip last year, basically back to being Bo Bichette this year. I think, would Bo Bichette have been a player you like? Would that have qualified for this season?
It very well could have been coming off a down year.
Yeah. And so, and like I will a player say, like that, where if they're healthy, I like to bet on the guy who's fully healthy coming off a not healthy season with a track.
Yeah,
record.
I will. Jeff Zimmerman of Fangraphs does a great article every year, and it's just a list of players who played through injury or may have played through injury. And that is definitely something I look at every year. That is a great article to look at, and he sort of tracks the performance of guys who went through that same situation the previous year and how they did, you know, in their so-called healthy year afterwards. So that is one I always find enlightening.
Then, you know, for me, sometimes I'll look at a player and be like, I don't like the cut of his jib. You know,
right.
And I'll just say no thanks.
And a lot of times that works too.
It does. Like, did you have Jared Kelnick on players you dislike?
Yeah, I just didn't like his vibe.
And that was very smart. Our next question is from Brad. Brad says, your mention of Bristol Motor Speedway being a short track got me thinking, is there a track big enough to hold two ball fields in its infield? Could we get MLB's first concurrent doubleheader, perhaps four teams to play two games so we could have a quadruple header? Not familiar with racetracks to know if this is possible, but I'm already spinning my wheels on the programming possibilities. For one, the four teams are selected in advance, but the matchups are randomly selected on the day of. Additionally, no reserve seating. Everything will be general admission, but they guarantee the teams will switch fields after game one, so no matter where you plop down, you get to see your team. The prospect of a home run falling into the other game's field of play be damned. I think this idea has legs. In fact, I would consider that a feature, not a bug. So first of all, thoughts on this idea, and then let's come up with some other places MLB should do one-off games.
First of all, I want to say I love the idea. I love the random nature of it. I think with maybe the scheduling, it'd be kind of difficult. Like, maybe you would have to do four teams from the same division or something like that. I don't know. I will say, in terms of real estate, in terms of space, you know, my roommate who you met is a Hoosier, and they have made me aware of the sheer size of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where the Indy 500 takes place every year. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the infield of it is 250 acres. It is unfathomably large. It is, if you are in the bleachers watching the race, you cannot track a car doing a lap. It's too big. You can't see across to the other side because the other side's like a mile away. So it is actually large enough based on acreage to fit not just two stadiums, but the entire league. The entire league. You could put 15 baseball stadiums there and everyone could play all at once. And you could just move around the bleachers to see which game you want to watch.
Dude, you just have 15 games going at once. The annual Indianapolis baseball jamboree. Oh,
I think that's so a great funny idea. So that's why two games at once? Let's let the whole league play.
In terms of other places, I pulled up the list of largest stadiums in the world. Now, number two on this list is Rungrado's First of May Stadium in Pyongyang. That's probably a no.
Maybe
for MLB. I think it's probably, I just seems unrealistic to me personally. The most interesting one on this list, I think the Big House in Michigan would be cool. Mm-hmm. I could see them trying to do like a college football stadium in an area at a place where that city cares about baseball too. Like doing it in Louisiana at Baton Rouge, doing like Braves Astros would probably pack the place at Tiger Stadium. But the one that pops into my mind, which feels kind of like a no-brainer, is Cubs Brewers at Lambeau.
Ooh, I like that idea a lot. Yeah, and I think that is sort of, I mean, I don't know if there are ideas beyond play a sport in a place where the other sport is played. You know what I mean? Like, is there a place that we could play a game that's not where other sports teams play? So, but I really like that idea a lot. Lambeau's an iconic venue, obviously.
I think the National Mall in DC. Mm. I mean,
that's a very good
building
one.
A temporary field here would be very difficult. And you have to balance like the novelty of the visual with the amount of people you can get in there. Right. Like the Field of Dreams game is not profitable from a like ticket sales standpoint because there are just not that many people that you can cram in. Whereas doing Bristol was probably a cash cow because there are 90,000 people showing up. Any other ones come to mind?
Churchill Downs. I think that sort of fits the brand here of you're giving baseball to an area that doesn't have Major League Baseball. So Louisville, for example, like that's the appeal of Rickwood with Alabama. That's the appeal of Field of Games or Field of Dreams, sorry, with you know, Iowa. And I think Churchill Downs, another like very iconic sports venue where you could do it at.
I like that a lot. Our next email is from Bradley. Hello, Jake and Jordan and Bailey. Why is the baseball world scared to talk about Isaac Collins as the NL Rookie of the Year? I'm curious how many people listening are like, what team is Isaac Collins on? Is it because you just had to look up who Isaac Collins is? He leads all rookies in F4 and WRC plus, as well as all left fielders and outs above average. He is sandwiched between Sidon Rafaela and PCA on the outfield jump leaderboard, yet he sits a distant third in betting odds for the award. Please help Brewers fans get this campaign off the ground. Thank you.
It's interesting to me. I think Rookie of the Year has more of a traditional stats voting stance than maybe even MVP. Like if he was in an MVP race right now with Drake Baldwin and Agustin Ramirez, like maybe Isaac Collins would be winning, right? But yeah, it's, you know, but I think a lot of times with Rookie of the Year, it comes down to sort of the more traditional stats. So even though he's like seventh in the league in on base percentage, you know, Agustin Ramirez has 17 homers and Collins has seven, you know, and Baldwin has, I will say, like a similar amount of plate appearances as a catcher, which is kind of akin to more playing time in general. I also am curious about like sort of the age element here. I mean, Isaac Collins is 28. I wonder if you're an older rookie, is that more or less advantageous than if you're a hyped prospect, a name that people knew coming into the season? Yeah. And I will also shout out to the top NL rookie pitcher by war is also a Brewer, and it's not the Miz, it's Chad Patrick. So I mean, the Brewers have
five of the 20 players. So like the top 10 NL rookies by war position, top 10 NL rookies by war pitcher, the Brewers have five of those 20 players. That is Isaac Collins, Caleb Durbin, Chad Patrick, Jacob Mizorowski, and Logan Henderson. And so it was only made five starts, but there just aren't that many good NL rookies this year. Do I think Isaac Collins wins it? I think if Ramirez cools off, maybe. If Ramirez ends up with 25 homers, it'll be hard for Collins. And the reason that Ramirez's war is so low, I think, is because he is an awful defensive catcher who is only catching right now because the Marlins don't really care about winning games this year and are hoping that he can develop. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. And if he does, it's a huge win. So I would say Ramirez is the favorite. But yeah, people are scared of Isaac Collins because, you know, he's on the Brewers.
I think the Brewers, like you said, you know, they have five of the top 20 rookies. I feel like they were kind of in a similar situation last year, too, because Churio was good. And then like even guys like Brian Hudson in the bullpen were probably ranking pretty high among, you know, players that were that still had rookie status. Yep. So I feel like this has been going on for a while.
Last year, they had Joey Ortiz was up there, too, in war. Mm-hmm. Tobias Myers was up there as well. Yeah, the Brewers are just finding guys, just putting them in the big leagues. Quick hilarious moment the other day from so I was at a Brewers Nats and was doing Pat Murphy's pregame press conference, and someone was asking about like Mizorowski going on the IL, and he was like, yeah, you know, like we got a lot of other guys starting to get healthy, you know, we got Tobias Myers and we got, you know, this guy and we got the hot dog guy and we got, and someone was like, what? Like the hot dog guy? He goes, yeah, Chad Patrick, the hot dog guy. Turns out Chad Patrick in his locker in AAA Nashville, like had a hot dog roller in his locker.
Oh, like at the gas station kind of?
Yeah. This is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, courtesy of Todd Rosiak. Quote, one of the games I got a little hungry, so I asked a clubby to get me a hot dog. Then Aaron Ashby had an idea. 2 weeks later, Ashby's got a hot dog roller in my locker. So Pat Murphy calls him the hot dog guy. Pretty great.
My mom 1 year got me a novelty hot dog toaster. This is probably when I was in college or something like that.
Hot dog toaster?
So it had a cylindrical shaped slot perfectly for a wiener to fit in. And then it had two normal compartments on the side where you would put the bun. It actually worked pretty well, but it broke after I used it three times or something like that, which is probably the appropriate amount of uses for a novelty gift such as the hot dog toaster. But shouts out to mom. That was a very funny gift.
Dude, the hot dog toaster is sick.
He should look into that rather than the roller. Because now you can toast the bun.
I'll let Chad Patrick know. Then you can toast the bun. That's actually a good point. Our last email is from Mac, and this is very simple. How is managerial performance best quantified? How do you evaluate managers? Bailey, how do you evaluate managers?
The short answer is I don't. However, I will try to give some objective data as in terms of how one could try to evaluate a manager. No, it's not. I guess it's not really totally my job, but I guess some ways you could evaluate the manager, beyond, when it cuts to a TV shot of the dugout, do people look happy and satisfied with their jobs?
Confident.
You can look at sort of wins, for manager of the year every year. I feel like the team that wins is just whoever gets the most wins over expectation. And for whatever reason, that is accredited to the manager in this case and not just, players playing better. Pythagorean win loss, I think, could be there. Because if you talk about the way a manager can affect sort of the outcomes of games, I would say bullpen management is up there. And that's going to have some correlation with Pythagorean win and loss. Are you winning the one run games, for example? And another sort of analog to that would be looking at inherited runners. Are you putting in relievers at a good time where they're going to be able to succeed even if there's traffic on the base paths? Yeah, I mean, if you're just looking at sort of objective data, which is a lot of what I do, then those would be some of the metrics I would look at. But I mean, otherwise, we're just talking vibes. We're just talking about if guys are happy and if egos are being properly massaged.
It is so subjective. Having, I spend a lot more time than you do, around managers talking, and they all sound great when they talk. You're these are 30 impressive people. To even get a managerial job, you have had to impress multiple times in multiple interviews with important people. And so that comes across no matter what. Yesterday I watched, great example, Mark Kotze. Seems good. No one on there's never fights on the A's, right? Is he good? I don't know. The way that we usually think about it, Jordan and I, is that at any given time, I think there are four good managers, four bad managers, and everyone else is just in the middle.
Yeah, what I say is Craig Counsell seems like a good manager. that's seems always good. My example of a good manager. I guess Kevin Cash is a pretty good manager. I don't know. We just don't know. And I think it can kind of vary year to year, especially for the other 22 managers in the middle there. Their contributions to the team might be worth +2 wins 1 year and -3 the next year. And it probably all balances out after a while.
If you are listening to this and you work for a major league team or you're on a major league coaching staff, text me or email us. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. Who's good at this? Anonymously. Who's bad at this? Anonymously. Because it really is just going up to a player and be like, is he good? I asked some guy in the Mets last year. I was like, hey, is Mendoza good at this? And they were like, for a first-year guy, he's really good and he's going to get even better. And it's like, I guess that's valuable, but does what a player think about their own manager, how many wins is that worth? Right? Would you rather have a guy who everyone hates, who always makes the correct in-game decision, or someone who's 70% in-game decision but is an incredible people person? Or in other words, if you took Pep Guardiola, right, who is the manager of Manchester City, who by all accounts seems to be elite at the what they call man management, and you just kerplopped him into the Dodgers with the same staff beneath Dave Roberts, how many wins would they be worth less, right? If the decisions are being laid out for him by the front office. Let's take a break. When we get back, I'm going to quiz Bailey. Bailey, are you the type of person who has nightmares about schoolwork?
Yes, even though I have been out of school for, I guess, 7 years now or something like that, I have the specific nightmare of I signed up for a class and didn't show up for it the whole semester, and now it's time to take the final.
That's what this is going to be. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Bailey Freeman, who I would argue less foolish than you'd expect as a guy. Like, I don't think you're particularly foolish.
No, maybe I'm a bit of a knave, if we're kind of using old-timey words.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man. At the end of this delightful episode, it's quiz time. Every year, Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association announces the winner of the Heart and Hustle Award. It is the vaguest award that exists. I'm going to read the description of this award, and then Bailey is going to go team by team and try and guess the 30 nominees. Created by Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association 2005, the Heart and Hustle Award is voted on by alumni and active Major League players and is presented annually to an active player who demonstrates a passion for the game of baseball and best embodies the values, spirit, and traditions of the game. 30 committees comprised of alumni players with established relationships to each team. One player from each MLB team is chosen by the committees based on the passion, desire, and work ethic demonstrated both on and off the field. Fans, alumni, active players will then vote on the winner. I guess it's worth noting, Bailey, the previous winners, as context for you. Previous winners include David Eckstein, Craig Biggio, who won it back-to-back years, Grady Sizemore, Albert Pujols, Roy Halladay, Torrey Hunter, Mike Trout, Dustin Pedroia, Josh Harrison, Anthony Rizzo, Todd Frazier, Brett Gardner, Mookie Betts, Howie Kendrick. Mookie Betts did it in 2018 when he was worth like 11 wins, which is awesome. Howie Kendrick, 2019. Ozzie Albies, 2021. Paul Goldschmidt, 2022. Marcus Semien, and last year was Bobby Witt Jr. No award was presented during the pandemic because none of us had heart and hustle. None of us were grinding enough during COVID. Bailey, do you feel prepared? I think this is a perfect bit for you because you are Mr. Numbers, and this is the opposite.
Right. This is purely vibes. The one kind of hint I got here is that pitchers don't tend to win it. And I think that makes sense because it's hard for a pitcher to show heart and hustle because hitters play every day. And I think part of the daily grind is kind of being factored in here. So I'm going to guess with more of a position player slant than a pitcher slant, even though I think pitchers are perfectly capable of showing both heart and hustle. It's just not seen as frequently.
I see. So you think if they pitched every day, if a guy, there should be a pitcher who in spring training is like, I want to win heart and hustle. I'm going to pitch every game.
Yeah. Okay. Sort of like a Ryan Yarbrough.
You're going to do this. Ryan Yarbrough. Yeah. Foolish is going to go here, and then Jordan is going to go on Friday when he's back. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
The Oakland Athletics.
Oakland Athletics, I'm going to say Jacob Wilson.
Incorrect. It is Brent Rooker. The Baltimore Orioles.
The Baltimore Orioles player who showed heart and hustle this year. I'm going to say, let's go Adley.
Ryan O'Hearn is not the answer. Ryan O'Hearn. Jackson Holliday.
Oh, okay. We're 0 for 2. Okay, so they picked the young guy this year. I like that.
Nepo baby? Jaron Duran. Oh, I just said the next one. Sorry. Pretend like
I would have probably guessed Jaron Duran.
I'm gonna give it to you. I'm gonna do Red Sox. You guess Jaron Duran. Okay, three, two, and one. Next up, Boston Red Sox.
I'm gonna pick a total hardo here in Jaron Duran.
This is like a free space. Yes, it is Jaron Duran. Chicago White Sox.
Now this one's interesting. Can I ask you a question? Are there any players nominated for a team that they no longer play for?
That is a very good question. And as far as I can tell, every nominated player is still being employed by the team for which they were nominated.
Okay. So I'm just going to pull one completely out of thin air here. And I'm just going to name a guy, and I'm going to say Lenine Sosa.
Lenine Sosa is incorrect. I think the correct answer here is not who is picked. This should be Mike Tauchman.
Yes.
Like it should be. It is Michael A. Taylor.
Wouldn't have been there, but he is a very respected player around the league.
Cleveland Guardians.
I mean, there's an obvious one. I mean, I'm
passion
just going to go
for the
J.
game
Ram
of baseball
here.
And best embodies the values, spirit, and traditions of the game. Yeah, it's J. Ram.
It's J. Ram.
He should win. The fact that he's never won this is actually kind of a sham.
He is sort of the embodiment of heart and hustle.
Detroit Tigers.
Ooh, this is one where I would be tempted to pick a pitcher potentially. So I'm going to pick Skubal.
Skubal is an interesting choice, and it is incorrect. It is Zach McKinstry.
Okay, he is, yes, that's the second type of guy that can win this award. That is an ex-Steiny pick.
The Houston Astros.
Okay, I'm not doing so hot here. What can I come up with here?
2 for 6 so far.
Yeah,
it's very
difficult.
Take,
it's very, the Astros pick is very difficult. That's your hint.
No, this is stupid exercise.
Oh, the exercise is difficult. Okay, because there is an obvious, there is a sort of a J Ram equivalent here in Altuve, but I'm not sure. But he changed position some. I feel like people respect that he tried the left field thing. So I'm gonna go Altuve.
It is Jeremy Peña. I would argue that he's maybe like too ripped for heart and hustle.
Yeah, too athletic.
It's heart and muscle. The Kansas City Royals.
Well, you told me Witt won it. So I'm trying to think if there's anyone else who would embody it better than him. I mean, is Bobby Witt Jr., is he hustle or is he just really fast? If you're really fast and you're putting in average effort, then that could be misinterpreted as hustle.
Sure, but people misinterpret things all the time. So,
yeah, I'm going to go Bobby Witt Jr. because, he won.
Bobby Witt Jr.
Guess,
is correct. Bobby Witt Jr. is correct. It is funny that you can continue to show heart and, as well, hustle. The Los Angeles Anaheim Angels.
Ooh, you told me Trout won it at one point. I kind of feel like maybe this isn't his year. I don't know, but he's been struggling and playing through injuries, which maybe guys like. I don't know. I'm going to go Zach Neto.
Zach Neto is correct. Little guy.
All right.
Getting the most out of his tools.
I like that. Okay. Starting to heat up here.
Minnesota Twins.
Minnesota Twins. Okay. And this player is on the Minnesota Twins.
Still
to
on
be
the
clear.
Twins. Still on the
Still
Twins.
Still there. Okay.
Which lowers it to like 7 guys. You can only pick like
that really narrows
guys.
It down for me in a big way. Joe Ryan is a thought, you know, if I want to go for a pitcher here. Last time I tried to go for a pitcher, it didn't work. I'll go Buxton.
Buxton is correct. Harrison Bader feels like he would have had this before he got traded. The New York Yankees. Yeah.
They don't have any. We just talked about it. Zero heart, zero hustle. We
problem.
Saw it in the tweet. Yeah, and that was the issue. I will make a pitcher pick here. I'm going to go Fried.
Max Fried is a very good pick. Last year, it is wrong. Last year, the nominee was Anthony Volpe. And I think it is hilarious that he is not the nominee this year because he has shown too much heart and too much hustle. That it is kind of tanking his defensive ability. The nominee this year is Paul Goldschmidt, obviously.
Oh, I would not have had that in my top five. Not, no offense to Goldie, but I mean, I probably would have guessed Grisham. Yeah. I probably would have guessed Bellinger, you know.
Sure. Goldschmidt, a previous winner of this award, and you don't lose heart or hustle.
True.
Seattle Mariners.
I mean, it's got to be Dumper, right? I know that it's not Hustle on the base pass because he's not known for his speed. But like, here's a catcher who's doing what he's doing. It's got to be him.
It is indeed him. The Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah.
Tampa Bay Rays. Ooh, this could be a young guy. No, I'm, well, I guess he's still kind of youngish. I'm going to go Taylor Walls here.
Taylor Walls is an interesting pick. It is Jake Mangum. And I think Jake Mangum represents this perfectly, this award.
Yeah.
Right? He has so much heart and hustle and not a lot else. I guess he's got, you know, he's got wheels. I guess that's hustle. He's got good bat to ball. I guess that's heart. The Texas Rangers.
I feel like they kind of like, I mean, this is a very respected player around the game who has a reputation as an Iron Man. So I'm going to go with Semien.
Marcus Semien is correct. Heart and hustle. Toronto Blue Jays.
Ooh. And we've got Bichette on the comeback season. This team has a lot of heart and hustle, to be honest with you. This team is chock full of it. I'm going to go Springer.
George Springer is a really good guess. It's unfortunately incorrect. It is Ernie Clement is the nominee.
You know what? You know what? That's a great pick, though. That is a great pick.
It's tough. It's tough because like half of these are just like, who's the scrappy white guy that plays three positions? And then the other half, it's like sometimes it's the best player. And it sometimes it's just completely out of left field. So that was the AL. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 15 in the AL, which I would say is very respectable. Let's move to the National League. The Arizona Diamondbacks. Still on the team.
Yeah. I mean, Carroll is fast, which I think, again, we think correlates with this award. You know what? I'm going to go with Perdomo.
Correct. Very, very good guess, Thank you, my friend.
Well, he is heart and hustle. He is.
Your Atlanta Braves, I would say not enough heart or hustle coming out of this team this year, but someone's got to be the nominee.
This is, I will say, for the sake of gamesmanship, this is the one I was spoiled on, but also not surprised to find out it was Matt Olson because of the Iron Man thing.
Yeah. Who else could this have been? I guess Ozzy. Yeah,
I just, it's they like an Iron Man for this award. I think that was kind of the basis of the Semien pick. Yeah.
Chicago Cubs.
This is a case where you could pick the best player on the team in PCA. You could pick a very respected guy in Dansby. You could pick another scrappy middle infielder in Nico Hoerner.
There's a lot of good options on this team.
This is a tough, this is a really tough one.
Do you want me to read you the, here, just so you know, demonstrates a passion. Okay. So it's a passion for the game and best embodies the values, spirit, and traditions of the game.
Man, this is tough. I'm going to say Dansby. I feel like that's that mix of the valuing, the traditions, and the passion.
Incorrect. It is Nico Hoerner.
Yeah.
Who is the Eckstein type. But you were on that.
Yeah.
You were on that.
I was on that.
The Cincinnati Reds.
I mean, Ellie plays with a lot of passion. He is the best. You know what? No, this is TJ Friedl.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. As soon as I remembered, I was like, oh, this is TJ Friedl. This is a TJ Friedl ass award.
He bunts a lot. He runs a lot.
Yeah, exactly. This is beautiful.
Oh, that was great. That was perfect. Okay, the Colorado Rockies.
It dawned on me mid-sentence.
The Rockies.
Okay, Colorado Rockies. Doyle is a thought. Goodman is a thought. I feel like it's not Tovar. Let's go. You know what? Let's go Goodman. He's catching.
Goodman is
correct. He's grinded it out. Yeah.
Nice.
You know what? I like Goodman a lot. I like Goodman a lot.
He's the only all-star. He kind of looks like AJ Puck, but squished.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of heart or hustle on the Rockies right now. The defending champion Los Angeles Dodgers.
Man, this is a tough one. Shohei coming back to the mound feels like could be a factor here. I feel like people like that. You've got Freddie's played through some injury, Mookie, and then you get to like maybe some of the lesser names on the team as well. I guess I'm just going to go Shohei for the pitching thing.
Okay. So Shohei is not right. It is a good guess. I think the correct answer here is Tommy Edman, who is not the pick.
Yeah.
Perhaps too injured. This is a tough one. Andy Pages. Andy Pages, the Heart and Hustle Award winner. I never would have guessed that.
I like that, though. I think that's a nice way to acknowledge what he's done, because he's had a very good year.
The Miami Marlins. So much
Miami
heart and
Marlins,
hustle on this team,
okay. There so is. They're nothing but it. Stowers obviously having the breakout. Edwards is fast.
But he's not white. And that
right. That there's helps. a lot of it's white and American too is the other sort of trend here. Where do I want to go on this one? I guess I'll go Stowers.
Stowers is correct. Good job.
Okay.
Billy Freeman.
Thank you.
The Milwaukee Brewers, a team that is just heart and hustle. This is maybe this is the toughest one to parse. There's like 25 options. You could pick Pat Murphy and I would believe you.
Yeah.
Who is the Heart and Hustle Award nominee for the Brewers?
I'm going to go with the rookie Caleb Durbin.
Caleb Durbin should be. Unfortunately, he's not. It is Sal Frelick, who feels like he's got a stranglehold on this award for a while.
Yeah. That's fine, I guess. They're all heart and hustle.
Got seven left. New York Mets.
When you told me that I was going to be doing this, that was the first team that I thought about. And there were like three guys I could think of.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Nimmo.
Brandon Nimmo, strong guess. It is Pete Alonso.
Okay.
I
wouldn't have been my second guess.
Iron Man, though. You know? Like, I think
Iron
fits
Man,
that.
Yeah.
Philadelphia Phillies.
I'm tempted to pick your friend Garrett Stubbs a little bit, but I think he's been kind of bouncing up and down right between AAA. So I'm not sure.
He has not appeared in a single major league game this year.
He hasn't? Oh, shows what I know. No. Oh yeah, they've had like Marshawn and all them up there. Yeah. Has he ever been the nominee for this award?
No. Backup catcher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like they kind of should. Okay, I'm going to go. This is a tough one. I feel like people respect the heart and hustle of Bryson Stott, so I'm going to go there.
Mm. That is a solid guess. It is Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah,
which is an interesting pick as a designated hitter. The Pittsburgh Pirates.
A DH, right. See, this one freaks me out a little bit because I could go for the pitcher pick here, right, with Skeens. Or we go the complete opposite direction and we go like IKF, you know?
Okay.
And so I think, or do I not want to pick any of those guys? I am going to go... Nah, I haven't picked. I mean, I really just haven't picked any pitchers. I'll go Skeens.
It is not Skeens. It is Tommy Pham, and I cannot figure out.
You know what? I get that. Actually, he's a lot of heart. He wears his heart on his sleeve. I like Tommy Pham a lot. Actually,
he's really heart and hustle and poor eyesight award. San Diego Padres.
Okay, not put much thought into this. I mean, Cronenworth is white. That is a factor.
Let me just double check that. Yeah.
is he white? This feels like one where you're not going to get it on a superstar like Machado or Tatis necessarily. Maybe more so. But Machado plays. I mean, he's been an Iron
Man. He does play.
They like him. Probably not Merrill this year. not Bogarts. You know what? I will. You know what? I will entertain it. I will go Machado.
Manny Machado is really, really good. It's Luis Arraez, and I think it's Luis Arraez because he's an old school type.
No.
And remember, he had that scary collision earlier this year, and he was playing like a week later.
Yeah, that's true. I did have the Arraez thought of this guy has high batting average, so they're gonna let him do this.
But he literally doesn't hustle. Like he just hits the ball into the outfield. San Francisco Giants.
Don't think it's Adames. Like, you sign a big contract and then you struggle a little bit in the field to start the year. I feel like that's not the key to winning this award.
That's a me guy move.
Iron Man guy, Matt Chapman.
Matt Chapman is correct. Yeah. Very good. The St. Louis Cardinals, who are the award.
Yes. I'm getting... I'll tell you, my first instinct was Brandon Donovan, and now I'm kind of working my way around the roster to try to decide if I like anyone other than him.
Yeah.
And I think I don't, so I'm going to say Brandon Donovan.
No, it's Brandon Donovan. Yeah, this is...
Yeah.
This is kind of a layup. Last but not least, Mr. Foolish, you are currently sitting at 14 out of 19. If you get this one correct, you will be at half. You will be at 50%,
yes.
Which is unbelievable, to be honest with you. Like, that is unbelievable. The Washington Nationals, on that team has heart and hustle?
Okay, Abrams had the poker thing last year, so not him. James Wood is too physically gifted for it to be him.
Too good.
Oh, this is Jake. I'm going to lock it in right now. This is Jacob Young.
He's done it. That was so impressive. At the buzzer, running three in a row to end it to get to 50%. Foolish Baseball. Bailey Freeman, very, very good job. The ones that you got, oh, wow, that was great. Huzzah to you, my friend. Huzzah to you. That was great. Great job.
Should I say some nice things?
No, you can just say I rule. Before we get out of here, say whatever you'd like. Plug whatever you'd like. Take a victory lap.
Check me out, guys. Foolish Bailey
check
on YouTube
out.
Or Foolish Baseball. I do just kind of a variety of content on my second channel, Foolish Bailey. I do sort of 15-minute video essay stuff on Foolish Baseball. Follow me on Twitter, a.k.a. X, or also Blue Sky, same handle, Foolish BB. And thank you, Jake, for having me on the show. And thank you, Jordan, for taking a personal day.
You cannot follow Bailey on Instagram, but if you can follow a bunch of other accounts that will just steal his work. And so it's effectively the same thing. Thank you to TJ Friedel, TJ Brazil, our producer, and Andrew Hartz. Thank you to me. Thank you to you, Bailey. Thank you to Jordan, like you said, for taking today off. And we will be back on Friday with another episode of Baseball Barbercast. Have a good couple days, friends.